Welcome to the Advisor Pact monthly session. I'm Mark Little, and we've got an important thing to talk about today. Let's get started. You know, the Advisor Pact monthly program is designed for advisors who are heading in the direction of delivering truly comprehensive financial services. The commitment for all advisors in this program is to make a pledge to each and every ideal client, which we call making an advisor pact. That is your commitment to each and every client to deliver truly comprehensive financial services through a deliverables team of subject matter experts, where your entire team is focused on four principles: protecting your clients, making sure that your team has your clients' back and there are no potential conflicts of interest, that your team is committed to paying attention and making sure that each and every client remains on track to the goals that they've shared with you and your team, and coordination. Your team has committed to coordinating all of their efforts so that all the financial people and the financial recommendations in each and every ideal client's life is well aligned under an overarching strategy for each client. And then finally, transparency. It's appalling when you read the surveys of our industry of how few clients really truly understand what they're paying for their financial products and for the financial services in their life. And you're committing to full and complete transparency. So that makes up the acronym PACT. You're making a pact with each and every client to deliver truly comprehensive financial services under these four promises. So the question today, the question that was submitted this week that I selected for us to delve into, dig deep into this week, is how should I set my compensation for truly comprehensive financial services? So there are five steps to setting your compensation properly, and we're going to spend the entire session today going through each of the five steps. So just to kind of summarize what we'll be covering today, the first step really is to accept that there is a proper mindset to establishing your compensation. There are a set of assumptions, there are a set of premises that you'll need to accept, and we'll go through those today. This is a business, after all, so you've got to understand that it's important to, when you're setting your compensation, to be mindful of what your costs will be. So if you're just starting out, you may not have a clear sense of what it's going to cost to deliver these services that we call truly comprehensive financial services. But before you can set your compensation, you have to anticipate what those costs are going to be. And we'll talk about that today. And you've got to commit to substantially pricing your compensation well above your cost so that you have profits. There's a realization that comes into play, and we'll go through there's an actual formulation that goes around this, but there's a realization that you need to come to of that clients are really willing to pay a substantial premium for excellence, and that you would be surprised what clients are actually willing to pay for services that are well executed. And then we'll talk about the importance of being the only game in town and to price your services in such a way that it recognizes that you're not just some other financial advisor. You cannot throw you and your team into the same bucket with every other financial advisor in town. No, we're going to talk about how to become a financial services monopoly in your community. And by being the only game in town, how to price and compensate yourself commensurate to being a monopoly. And then finally, we're going to face what is ultimately the biggest obstacle to setting proper compensation, and we'll end on that today. So let's go through them just with a little bit more understanding of what we're going to be dealing with here. So I said there are some assumptions. There are a specific set of presumptions that you'll need to accept before you can properly set your compensation. This cost-based method is a commitment on your part to be profitable. And the premise here is that if you're going to be profitable, you have to understand in advance roughly what your costs are going to be. Otherwise, how can you set your compensation above your costs? And just how do you basically acknowledge the fact that if you're sufficiently committed to implementing at a high level, how do you take into account this reality that if you're truly committed to delivering at a high level, how do you figure out what clients are actually willing to pay? You know, forget just establishing your costs and marking those up by some factor. No, take it the other way around. What's the client? Look at it from the other end of the telescope and try to establish what would clients actually be willing to pay if you could deliver at an extraordinary level. And that's really the key to setting your compensation is establishing what clients are truly willing to pay. And once you're a monopoly, it's a very elegant concept to then think about, if I've committed to becoming a monopoly, if I'm going to be the only game in town, how do you price a monopoly? That really takes the concept of what clients are willing to pay to an entirely new level. Because if clients are willing to pay at a high level, and then they realize that there's not just a choice between you and some other advisor, it's really just a choice between you or nothing, because there is nothing else available like you, then how do you price in an environment like that? And then again, I keep saying at the end, we'll go through what is in fact the biggest factor in all this, which we will deal with at the end. Okay, so what are these assumptions? What are the assumptions that we have to accept to get our mindset correct so that we can start thinking about setting our compensation properly? Well, hate to quote myself, but the reality is, the starting point for the assumptions is just to acknowledge the fact that we all know that those trusted advisors who offer the most comprehensive financial services actually command the highest compensation in our industry. And not only that, not only are these advisors the most highly compensated, but they are the most indispensable to their clients. In other words, they never lose clients because clients are fearful of losing them. It's the other way around. So it all comes down to delivering the most comprehensive financial services that you're capable of offering. Okay? So that's presumption number one, that those who offer the most comprehensive financial services are the most highly compensated and are the most indispensable to their clients. The next presumption is you've got to realize that not all clients actually want truly comprehensive financial services. It's not every client that wants what we're talking about. But ideal clients do. And that's why we're not going to do it here, but we really stress the importance of you establishing a firm ideal client profile, not just a wish list of the type of client that you'd like to work with, but rather a profile of a client that you're convinced that you serve best. And it's going to be a list of quantitative and qualitative, subjective and objective factors, things that are important, that you feel are important to be in place for you to be able to serve at the highest level. What type of client do you serve best? In your ideal client profile, you do need I believe that a component of every advisor who delivers truly comprehensive financial services, a component that's in common in all of our ideal client profiles is the notion that we are only seeking financial delegators, that we're not seeking clients who are not willing to delegate their financial affairs. and the reason being that we don't want clients that don't want our advice and aren't willing to pay our fee. So a financial delegator is someone who's seeking people in their lives to push off as many responsibilities as possible so that they can go focus on those things in their life that matter most to them. And so an ideal client who is a financial delegator wants truly comprehensive financial services. That's what actually helps define them as an ideal client, in part, is the fact that they are seeking someone to take over all their financial affairs because they have things in their life that they'd rather be investing that time doing. And of all the important things in life, your family, time spent with your friends, relationships, exploring your faith, spending time getting more fit, health and fitness, you know, all the things that are more important than money in life. But if you list all the things that are really important in life, including your financial affairs, it's usually the case that the financial affairs is the only thing on the list that you could delegate. And so financial delegators are actively seeking people that they could delegate this to. So not all clients are actually seeking truly comprehensive financial services, but in part, that's what an ideal client is. They are seeking someone to take over as much as possible. And to acknowledge as a presumption before we get into this issue of compensation that what we're talking about here, this delivering of truly comprehensive financial services, that is to say, protecting your clients, paying close attention and being proactive, and coordinating all the financial people in their life and all the financial recommendations in their life, and assuring full transparency so that clients know up front before they make decisions what all the financial products and what all the financial people in their life are charging or costing. Well, you have to acknowledge that this is an enormous gap in the marketplace. I mean, it seems like it should be easy to go out and find an advisor who would do these four things. But the reality is, it's not easy. It's a huge gap in the marketplace. There are millions of multimillionaires out there in the community that are amongst you that are seeking help that can't find it anywhere at any price. So you have to acknowledge up front, not every client wants this, but those that do want this cannot find it anywhere, and that there are millions of multimillionaires out there who would love to have an advisor doing all this. But when we actually study these potential clients, their mindset is they're not actually out there looking for an advisor like this. Why? Well, it's easy. Because none of their affluent friends have an advisor like this. And they, therefore, based on whatever they've seen of financial advisors in their life, in their history, they don't believe that an advisor like this is out there. My friend Rick Pereira calls this the unicorn syndrome. You know, that financial advisors at this level are like unicorns in the mind of a potential ideal client. You know, it's something that they've heard might exist in theory out there somewhere, but nobody's ever seen one and nobody really believes they exist. So you're kind of fighting an uphill battle of belief when you meet a potential client that is a potential ideal client, because they truly want an advisor like this, but their mindset is you kind of have to get over that first barrier, which is their disbelief that anyone like this exists anywhere at any price. But the reality is that's a competitive advantage. If you accept these assumptions that there are people out there who truly want this level of service and they don't believe it exists anywhere at any price, and you commit and resolve to being that advisor, well, you have just filled an enormous gap in the marketplace. And by accepting these presumptions, you're ready to start setting your compensation. So let's start with the cost-based method for calculating your compensation. This is really just the starting point. Now, many advisors, this is the starting and ending point where they try to estimate what all this is going to cost to deliver to clients. And once they figure that out, they mark it up a little bit and figure there's a nice profit in there and just move on down the road. They've set their compensation. Well, with the process we're going to be discussing, the five steps to setting your compensation, this is just the, in essence, the starting point. So the first step is to establish your annual cost for delivering comprehensive financial services. You need to nail down what it's going to cost to hire a team of skilled subject matter experts. How much are all of them going to cost you per client per year? And basically estimate, you know, what all these team members are going to charge you. Now, the only guidance I'm willing to give you at this point, because professionals charge such different scales across the globe, and we deal with financial advisors successfully implementing this methodology all over the English-speaking world. And these subject matter experts charge different rates all over the world. But the one thing that you can use as a guiding principle is the amount of time that it takes per subject matter expert per client per year. And then you can apply whatever professionals charge in each of these various financial disciplines in your area. Okay? And use this just as a guideline. But I think for working, as a working exercise, you can assume that a financial planner will take approximately 12.75 hours per client per year, including their support person, to fully deliver truly comprehensive, their role in truly comprehensive financial services to your clients at the level we're discussing. So you figure out whatever financial planners at the high end of the profession, the most highly skilled financial planners you could possibly acquire, what are they charging per hour? And you try to get it down to that kind of an hourly rate. Now, ultimately, and we're getting kind of beyond the scope of what we want to talk about today, but what we want you to do ultimately is negotiate a flat fee with each of these subject matter experts. But the starting point, a good starting point, is to figure out what is their current hourly rate, and then to just in the back of your mind know that in this case a financial planner should not exceed 12.75 hours, including their support person, for delivering at the level that we're talking about. Okay? So this will help you come up with an estimate of what a financial planner should cost you. Now, you don't spend time with the subject matter expert when you're recruiting them talking about the 12.75 hours. This is just confidential knowledge you have in the back of your head. As they listen to what you're seeking from them, and as they then describe to you what their robust process is for serving a client that meets your ideal client profile, then, you know, they estimate to you what it's going to cost per client per year to deliver at the service level that you're seeking. And we only provide you this guidance so that if they are suggesting that they need to invest far more hours than this, then you've got this as a baseline. And you can not challenge them on that. But I think my approach always is if a subject matter expert is claiming that they want to spend more hours than what I have as my guideline here, that I just want them to justify it. I want them to tell me what is it more that they are doing for their clients, and they better really wow me with the additional things they're doing, because this is the baseline that I'm working off of. So 12.75 hours for a financial planner per client per year, 8 hours per client per year for a tax planning subject matter expert, 7.25 hours per client per year for the money management or investment management subject matter expert, a little bit less, just under 7 hours for the insurance subject matter expert, and finally, a little less than 5.5 hours per client per year for the estate planning subject matter expert. All of these hours include their support people, and I would never invite a subject matter expert onto my team unless they had at least two support people. And I want them utilizing them well. And by the way, the estate planning subject matter expert is only low in time because their full process only kicks in once every 3 to 5 years. So we have typically an estate planning attorney, we have them reviewing the entire estate plan, meaning all the wills and trusts and all the associated documents, a full and complete review every 3 to 5 years. And so we charge our clients, or we suggest that you estimate in your budgeting process an average annual hourly amount so that it works out evenly across the years. And so anyway, so this is the guidance that you can use. We talk about making an estimate of what it's going to cost per client per year, and then times however many ideal clients it is that you're going to be acquiring. And this helps you establish your cost for delivering these comprehensive financial services. So that's a starting point for establishing the cost of the subject matter experts. Now, once you have that figured, you need to establish how much that you're going to need annually to run your business. Now, this would be your office lease, your payroll for your staff, and all the associated expenses that are necessary to run your business. That would be utilities, supplies, licenses, any dues that you have to pay. If you're paying a dealer group or a broker dealer a payout, that would be there. The third thing you need to estimate and project is you need to establish how much is required annually to fund your goals. Now, this sounds a little basic. For some of you, this sounds like so basic. But there are financial advisors out there that deliver financial plans to clients that do financial plans who do not have a fully funded financial plan currently in place for themselves. And that's what this is really talking about. You need to figure out how much you need to set aside each and every year annually to fund your future goals. So we've got three numbers here so far. The annual number required to serve your clients through your subject matter experts, the amount of money needed to run your business, and then you need to figure out how much money needs to be set aside so that you're on track to your own future goals. Once you've got those three numbers, then you establish how much you need to live your life, to live a fabulous life currently. I mean, you want to make sure that your current life is figured into the equation. So now you sit down and you project for the next 12 months how much discretionary and non-discretionary income that you need in order to live a great life. And then finally, the fifth number is to estimate your tax liabilities on all the gross revenue of the four items above. So these are all the numbers that you will need to establish your annual cost. Now that you have all your costs established, the math is really simple. You divide the total for all of these by the maximum number of ideal clients that you want to work with. So if you want to work with 50 ideal clients, you take that total amount and you divide by 50. So you do the math. You figure out how much it's going to cost per year once you've got all your clients in place, okay? So that is the client cost method. Now let's look at the client value method. And the premise was that you would be surprised what clients are actually willing to pay if you deliver at a higher level. And so we are talking about delivering at the highest level. We're talking about delivering at a level that's unattainable by clients anywhere else. So what would clients, how do we approach this notion of trying to figure out and estimate what are clients actually willing to pay? We know our costs now. We know that our compensation needs to be higher than our cost, but how much higher? Like, what are clients willing to pay? Well, the starting point is, and you're going to have to sit down and do kind of a fun project here. If you've got a handful of clients, you're going to have to commit to sitting down with the top 3 to 5 clients. We always recommend, start with your top three clients and just survey them and try to figure these things out. This is what you're trying to get your mind around. What is your true value to them if you're delivering at a level that actually gifts them time back to themselves? In other words, what is their time worth to them per hour? So you do things like the quality of life enhancer exercise. You help them figure out, you know, what are the things in life that are more important than money? And how much time are they currently spending on those things? And is there an amount of time that they would they wish they could spend more on as far as those things that are more important than money? And what you're trying to figure out is, what is that time worth to them? Now, you could sit down and try to estimate what are they currently earning. So many of these clients that you would be dealing with, I mean, you figure it out. What is their annual value? Are they capable of earning $500,000 a year, $1 million a year, several million per year? And so what's their time worth? If you figured out what is each and every hour of their day worth to them, then you could sit down and figure out how much time are they currently spending on their finances. So how many hours are they currently spending organizing their financial affairs? Or in many cases, how many hours should they be spending organizing their financial affairs? So the one thing you know is that we have a different business model. We have a business model where we coordinate all the personal financial affairs for our clients. That's what we're talking about when we say truly comprehensive financial services. And when you sit down with clients that are potential clients, if there's any coordination going on at all, it's usually them doing it. So you need to get a handle on how much time is an affluent person currently spending on their financial affairs, or identifying the gaps of what they should be doing, coordinating all their financial affairs, and even if that coordination is not currently happening. And then you figure out what they're currently spending on their financial affairs. So if you're involved in their situation, you can find easily. You know what you're charging. If they have other financial advisors in their life, it's just an exercise that we call the truth in fees exercise to figure out what they're paying for everyone. And this is not just in the area of investments. We're talking about truly comprehensive financial services. So even if it's not currently being coordinated in their life, you know, these affluent people do have other financial people in their life, and it's your goal to find what is the truth in we call it the truth in fees exercise, where you look at every major financial area of an affluent person's life. You look at their taxes. What are they currently paying on taxes and tax planning? What are they currently paying on wills and trusts, what we call estate planning? What are they currently paying all their insurance people? And this is going to require a little bit of digging. But what are they paying in commissions and fees for their current insurance policies, including their auto and their homeowners and their life insurance, if they have any annuities? What are they currently paying the financial people? You know, what are they paying for the financial products and the financial people in their lives? And then So money management. So if they've got internal fees and mutual funds, or if they have privately managed separate accounts, your task is to figure out what's the total amount, what's the truth in the fees that they're currently paying in all the financial areas of their life. And then to figure out just the stress level, like to have a conversation with these people that you're doing this exercise with, to figure out, you know, what, you know, one of the two spouses typically is doing the lion's share of the financial work for the family. And the other spouse, you need to make an effort and ask the question, try to establish how much stress and anxiety or irritation is the other spouse experiencing as far as being involved. It might be, you know, trying to understand if the other spouse, who's not the financial person, if they're comfortable with how things are going financially. How much irritation or stress does the other spouse have when it comes to being involved or getting everything done in the financial realm? And then how thorough and accurate and proactive actually is the current method that they're using? Are there current gaps in their planning in terms of, things that they're not doing? And just assessing how thorough and accurate their planning is. You're not trying to catch them or play getcha on that they're not doing a lot of things. This is more of an internal assessment for you to try to figure out what would it be worth to the client. Once you've had this conversation with either one of your top clients or to sit down with an affluent person and just do kind of a market research conversation, what you're trying to establish is what is their time worth and how much would it cost to take over that part of their life? So let's say you have a client that actually earns $1 million a year. So that works out roughly, if you divide it by 2,000 hours, let's assume they work 2,000 hours a year, that's $500 an hour. So let's say that this client says, maybe on the investment front, I spend 3 hours a month sitting down with my investments and kind of reconciling things and making sure that everything's okay. And maybe, so let's say 3 hours a month on investments. Let's say I spend maybe half an hour a month on taxes, and it doesn't really work out that way. It's more like 6 hours a year during just 3 or 4 months of the year. But, I have to sit down and gather all the documents, get them to the tax person. I'm talking hypothetically here. So you have another 6 hours a year for that. And then, you look across all the insurance and money management, everything, not just investment management, but you've got just general financial planning issues. They got to go do their banking. They've got to balance their checkbook, whatever. Let's say the whole thing works out to, I don't know, let's say 20 hours a year, like half a full work week for them per year. So if they are making $1 million a year, that means their hourly rate for themselves, what the time should be worth to them, is $500 per hour. Because that's, if they could pay somebody $500 an hour, then they could actually free up their time and go do something else. So if this takes them, let's just say hypothetically, 20 hours per year, 500 times 20 is $10,000. So that is the break even for them. So if they were to pay you $10,000, that would free them up to go do other things. Then you look at what they're currently paying. So you go dig in and you look at their, this is $10,000 in addition to what they're currently paying, because these are things that on top of what their current arrangement is that they would love to get rid of doing. Okay. So then you look at what they're currently paying, and let's say they have, $5 million. They have a $5 million portfolio, and you look into their, let's say they're in mutual funds and what they're paying between, and they have maybe one privately managed separate account. But when you look across the whole thing, they're paying about a percentage, 1% on their $5 million. So they have $5 million times 1%. That means they're paying $50,000 a year. Now, when you confront them with that, they may say, I don't think I'm paying that much. And you have to point out to them as part of the truth and fees exercise that you've done a little bit of research. You've looked into the internal expenses of their investments and maybe some of the fees that are being charged by the advisors and so forth are buried inside the investments. It's buried in the prospectus, hidden fees, hard to find, but you've ferreted them out because you've researched it. So there's $50,000 of what they're currently paying, plus $10,000 in addition to that they'd be willing to pay. And so now you've got kind of a $60,000 willingness to pay. The $50,000 they're currently paying, they have to admit that because they're currently paying that, plus the $10,000 that they'd love to find somebody to do all these things for them that they're currently doing. So now you have another calculus. You've got your costs. Let's say your costs, when you figure out all your subject matter experts and your current cost to run your business and the amount of money you need to fund your future goals and the amount of money that you need to live your current life and pay your taxes, let's say, and you divide that by, the 50 ideal clients that you need, let's say your cost is something like $9,000 or $10,000 per year cost per client per year. And let's just round it off and say $10,000. And let's say now you've got a client that's willing to pay because you've done your research that their time is worth and they're willing to pay when you compare against what they're currently paying and what they'd love to not do anymore in their life. There's a willingness to pay up to $60,000. And you get that willingness from the research that you've done on a combination of these factors here. So that's quite a gap. And I think the rule of thumb should be that when you do this calculation, if the client's not willing to pay double or quadruple your cost, then you need to keep at this exercise, because that's the benchmark I'm giving you. That when you adequately research this and you actually are fishing in the right ponds, you're talking to the right potential ideal clients, people that whose value as far as their time is extraordinarily high. In other words, what they could be doing with their time is so much more valuable than what it would cost them to hire someone to manage their financial affairs. You're looking for a potential ideal client and what they are quote unquote willing to pay based on their current situation and, you know, the amount of time that they could eliminate and refocus towards things that are more important in their life. So this is what you call the client value-based method. It's really trying to get a handle on not just, profit based on marking up from your cost, but rather looking at it from the other end of the telescope, as we said before, and trying to figure out what's a client actually willing to pay when they stop and they realize what they're currently paying and all the things that they're currently still doing and still entangled with, when they realize they have not really, and they know this, they have not gotten out from under their financial managing of their own financial affairs. And that's what you're trying to get a handle on. If you could take that over for them, what would they be willing to pay? Okay? And I'm saying if it's not double or quadruple the cost, then you're not thinking of it. You haven't done the research, either enough research, or you haven't been talking to enough of the right kinds of potential clients. I think it's important that at this point that you confront the issue that you have limiting beliefs and that you need to leave behind any and all of these limiting beliefs. They are holding you back. You need to confront and really put on the back burner, like push them out of your consciousness. Any thoughts such as clients like this don't exist where I am, or my potential ideal clients don't value their time as much as people elsewhere do, or I just can't find financial delegators, or I'm not able to ramp up my value quickly enough to earn what's possible. In other words, you do figure out that what clients are willing to pay as a multiple of what your costs are truly are double, quadruple, even greater than that. Some advisors are charging 10 times their cost. But don't let your limiting belief of thinking, yeah, but I can't get my client service value or my deliverables up to the point that a client would be willing to pay that amount. I can't get my service level up quickly enough to actually earn that fee that of what's possible. That's a limiting belief. That's not true. We've been working with advisors. First of all, we did this ourselves from January of the year 2000 to October of 2002. 34 months, we ramped up our service value. We started charging our full service fee to our clients on day one. We simply committed to getting the service level up so quickly that we were implementing faster than the client could recognize and of what the clients needed. So we have a process for this, and you need to basically commit to the process. If you will implement in the way exact method that we suggest that you implement, if you start putting your subject matter experts in place and doing it the way we say to do it, and you commit to getting a subject matter expert in place at least once every 60 days, then you'll be ramping up your service value faster than the clients need you to. Actually, faster than your clients can absorb the service level that they need in order to deliver the value that they're willing to pay. You can ramp your service level up quicker than what clients can actually mentally absorb as far as what their needs are. So if you let them, these and hundreds of other myths or limiting beliefs will actually derail you from establishing your ideal business, your ideal life. Don't let these things stand in the way. Clients do exist where you are. And even if they don't, even if you were to and convince me that you live, you know, I'm from Texas originally. So if you are from, I don't know, East Gumshoe, Texas, and you live in a town of 50, and you're somehow you convince me that clients like this don't exist, well, I'm still not going to accept it. And maybe you say that subject matter experts don't exist where you are. The idea of virtual subject matter experts is a powerful notion. The fact that clients exist everywhere. I'm just putting out there on the table. I don't know where you are. I do know that having worked through this with dozens of advisors over the years, that in most of your areas, advisors that contend very strongly that clients like this don't exist where they are, it ends up not being true. You're only looking for a small handful of ideal clients, at the very most 100. So we have a handful of advisors whose goal it is to acquire 100 ideal clients. Far more than that, I would say the average is 50 or less. So of the advisors that we work with who make a full commitment to delivering at the level that we're talking about, most are just looking for somewhere between 50 and 100 clients. And so you have to acknowledge that, you know, where do you have to go in order to find not thousands, but just 50 or 100 ideal clients that are seeking what you're putting together here in terms of a business, seeking this level of service. And my contention, this is one of our premises, is this is an unserved market, that there are literally millions of multimillionaires out there that are seeking services just like this. So don't tell me clients like this don't exist. They not only exist, they don't think you exist. And so they may be hard to find, but they're there. There are millions of them. And if they're difficult to find, it's usually because they think you're like a unicorn. They've never seen one. And so they're not even particularly looking because they don't even think you exist. But clients who are valuable, in other words, if in their free-range native environment, they're making, you know, $500,000, $1 million a year. You know, their hourly rate is quite precious to them. And as long as they are inspired people who have things in their life that matter more than money, this notion of figuring out what's their time worth, their time is worth quite a bit. So don't tell me that they don't value their time as much as people do elsewhere. Valuable people, successful people who are worthy of, you know, high levels of income, you know, they value their time and they're everywhere. There's millions of them. And they may not, they probably are where you are. It's a limiting belief to think that they're not. But even if they weren't, they're everywhere. They're, how far do you have to go from where you are to go find 50 of them? And financial delegators can be found. As a matter of fact, that is the definition of an ideal client. They are looking, as we said before, they're looking for someone to push off as much as they can so they can go focus on things that matter more than money. And if you're not talking to enough people that have things in their life that matter more than money, then you're not talking to enough people. That's the reality. And as I spent quite a few minutes talking about, you can ramp up your value quicker than you need to in order to deserve the fee that you're envisioning. Okay? So let's move on to step four. So now that you've figured out your cost, you're going to price yourself as a multiple, you know, double, quadruple, 10 times maybe more than your cost. And you're now convinced that clients, you have a sense of what clients are willing to pay, which is that multiple many times more than your cost. I want to introduce this concept, which really is more a decision on your part. And I'm going to encourage you that there's no reason why you should not make this commitment. You know, if you're going to be serving at this level, if you're going to be pledging to make an advisor pact with your clients, if you're going to be building a team of subject matter experts and delivering and committing to deliver what we call truly comprehensive financial services so that you're fully delivering and coordinating the financial affairs for all your ideal clients, then you are indeed, if you deliver on what we teach, then you have established a financial services monopoly in your community. The question is, have you committed to that service level? I'm throwing it out there. You not only should, but why shouldn't you? If you accept the notion that this is not available anywhere else in your community, then why not get it clear in your mindset and begin? It's part of your communication process. Becoming so committed to this notion that what you're offering is not only scarce, but it's not available anywhere else. Once you become convinced in your own mind that what you're offering is not available anywhere, then you can price even higher than what clients are willing to pay. And they'll pay it. Why? Because it really boils down to, does a client truly want this level of coordination? You know, the advisor pact, what's it worth to a client to be fully protected and to have someone on their team whose role it is to protect their assets and to protect their financial strategy? What's it worth to a client to have a team in place that are so proactive that not only does nothing ever blow up financially, so there are no financial surprises, but opportunities are never missed? And the team is so proactive that whenever there is a need for a course correction, your team proactively spots the need and makes recommendations to adjust and make the required course corrections that are necessary to keep on, to remain on track, and to coordinate everything. So, you know, before you came along, potential ideal clients were coordinating. If there was any coordination at all, they were doing it themselves. They were, you know, picking up the phone and talking to their accountant, and then they'd pick up their phone and talk to their estate planning lawyer, and they'd pick up their phone and talk to their insurance agent. They're doing it themselves. Here you come along, you take all that over. That's a gift of time back to them. It not only is a gift of time, but now things are well aligned. There's now something that never was in place before. There's now an actual overarching strategy. And all the financial people in the client's life are aware of this overarching strategy. And every recommendation that's issued in all these areas of the client's financial life, financial planning, money management, insurance, estate planning, and tax, all those recommendations are always perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy. Why? Because you and your team are coordinating to make sure that is the case. And what's that worth to a client? It gives them time, but it's a better coordinated financial environment. You know, this is the penultimate, what's it worth to have your financial house in perfect order and to keep it that way for the rest of your life? And then as far as full transparency, I just think don't underestimate this nagging worry that some clients have that they just don't have any sense of what they're really paying for their investments. They don't understand often whether an investment is being recommended because it truly is suitable for them or because somehow, some way, the person recommending it is getting compensated in a way that that benefits them rather than the client. So you're taking that issue out. What's it worth to a client so that there's full transparency and that they are always crystal clear about what they're paying for financial products and what all the financial people in their lives are making, like their insurance agents and, you know, just this black box of what they never before knowing what all these people were earning. So now you're a monopoly. You're not just something that's different. You're not just radically differentiated from the other advisors in town. It really is assessing if a client truly wants all of this, it's either you or nothing. So if the choice is they can either get all of this and get you, or they just don't get this at all because it's just not available anywhere else, what implication does that have on your compensation? Does it lift what your compensation even higher than what the average client is willing to pay, meaning that you're actually looking for a subset of ideal clients that are truly looking for something that will do all of these things which are not available anywhere at any price. And so it's a very country club environment. This is only for certain types of potential ideal clients. Certainly clients that can afford it, but even among those, it's for those who want a level of service that truly is unavailable anywhere else. And they recognize that they better move fast because you're not seeking 1,000 ideal clients. You're only seeking, let's just say, 50. And that once you've got 50 ideal clients, you're closing your business to new clients. And so if they don't hire you before you've become fully subscribed, then they can't get you at some point. You are a limited, scarce entity. And if they want you, they better move fast. And so I'm just pointing out that if you can get your mindset to this level, this is what I always have in my mind about our services. I know for a fact that potential clients that I, of course, we're not accepting clients anymore, but way back when I talked to a potential ideal client, I knew this. I knew that no matter how much they said ignorantly that they have somebody already in their life doing what we do, I knew for a fact that was false. That when we dug into it, the people that they are working with are not doing anywhere near what we're doing. So the only question becomes, what's it worth to a client once they realize I'm the only game in town? And am I looking for a subset of a subset? If there are millions of multimillionaires out there, if I'm this confident and I'm this committed to delivering at this level and I make the decision, I'm not going to cease implementing until I become this monopoly. In other words, it might take me 10 months to 16 months to get this in place, but how committed are you to getting the implementation of what we're teaching in place and then keep moving forward until you're not just better than every other advisor in town, you're the only game in town? And once you've got to that level of confidence, what implication does that have on your price? If you are only accepting 50 ideal clients, then every time you add an ideal client, that is a window closing on your community of their ability to work with you. And it has a significant implication. So my advice to you, commit to becoming a monopoly. Why not? So, you know, this is the Advisor Pact. We just walked through the protection, attention, coordination, and transparency. So this is, just to reiterate and finalize on this point, this is something your potential ideal clients will never find anywhere else. It's they either choose you or nothing. There's no one else available to deliver on these promises in your community. If you don't believe that, go looking for them yourself. We did that here. I live in La Jolla, California, a very, very affluent seaside village in Southern California. And my friend Bill Bachrach and I went around in our community and looked for advisors that are out there free range in the native environment, delivering at this level, truly comprehensive financial services through a team of subject matter experts. So it's not just a one-man band, and that they are actually protecting and paying attention, close attention, and coordinating, and are fully transparent. And we found one, and it, of course, was an advisor working with us. And we looked at everybody. We looked at, you know, private wealth groups, and there's tons of them in this little beach town that I live in. You go down into the village where I live. I walk into La Jolla Village, and you just everywhere you turn, there's wealth management firms and, you know, Northern Trust and all these different companies. And as we interview them, none deliver at this level. None. Well, one, the advisor that we're working with who's in the village. Okay. And so this is not available anywhere at any price. And the point is, it starts with you making a decision to be a monopoly. And then once the dime drops for your potential clients and they realize this, that it's not just a choice of you over some other financial advisor. It's either you or nothing, because nothing like this is available anywhere else. That's where your pricing needs to be commensurate with you being a monopoly. I mean, you should be the most expensive option in town. Now we get to the fifth issue, the issue that I say is the biggest, most significant obstacle to setting the correct compensation level for you, and it is confidence. What you need to realize is your compensation level is, at the end of the day, is an issue of confidence. That the higher your confidence in your ability to deliver on all of this, then the higher you're going to be willing to set your compensation. So if you're not willing to set your compensation very high, then you need to confront the fact that this is that the real issue is your lack of confidence. And you need to work on that. You need to work on your confidence in your willingness and your ability to actually implement. So what's holding you back? Is it a low commitment to implement? I mean, that definitely, a low commitment to implement can limit you. Your resolve to implement everything that we teach, that is the main factor in your ability to right size and increase your compensation where it needs to be. So your confidence and your willingness to implement is the issue on the table. And it is, I'm going to say, it's the most important issue. When we come across advisors that have their compensation set too low, and by the way, most advisors charge way too little, it's a matter of low confidence. And it is also an issue of advisors having too many options. But let me just say this. I just want to end on this point. Of all the advisors that we work with and that we've ever worked with since 2002, the average advisor is charging more than $25,000 per client per year compensation as their predictable minimum annual recurring revenue compensation. Okay? That's the average. So half are charging more than that. The lowest, I believe, is $20,000. So I think of all the advisors that we work with, the lowest fee that we've ever seen is $20,000 per client per year. The average is $25,000. That means half charge more than $25,000. We have a handful that are charging $50,000 per year, per client per year. And we have a ton charging $40,000 per client per year. We have one advisor charging $100,000 per client per year. So they're just getting started. We'll see. I'll report on their ability. I'm very curious to see, because this is a confidence issue and this advisor's confidence level is so high and this advisor's willingness to implement quickly is there. So the confidence is there. The commitment to implement is there. The resolve to implement is in place, and therefore the compensation has been set at the highest level of any advisor we've worked with. You know, I have full confidence that they'll be fine. He's just searching for 35 ideal clients. So the question is, are there 35 ideal clients that are not only willing to pay $100,000, but once they realize this is the only advisor they can find anywhere to really take the coordination of all their personal financial affairs off their hands so they can go safely focus on other things. We'll see. I'll let you know. But I do want you to know that if you're charging less than $25,000 per client per year, U.S. dollars, you're charging less than the average. And I would encourage you to go for it. Go for the gusto. Recognize that setting a compensation level at or below the average is a limiting belief. It's a confidence issue. It's you. It's not your client's willingness. It's not that there aren't clients like this in your that you could acquire somehow. It's you. It's you, and it's your confidence. So how do you raise your confidence? We will end with this. Resolve to fully implement everything we teach. We're showing you step by step how to implement truly comprehensive financial services. Just resolve that you're going to implement. Don't let a month go by that you're not making forward progress implementing what we're teaching. And promise to never consciously lower the level of service and value you could be providing your ideal clients. We have advisors that predictably, you know, at some point, they just say, that's it. I'm not willing to work any harder. I think clients are willing to pay a certain amount. And if we lower the level of service from what you're talking about, Mark, and what the system is subscribing, in other words, we are, it's not that I'm setting the standards so high. It's that we've done the work that advisors haven't taken the time yet to do. We have spent the last 30 years studying ideal clients, and we've set this system to be what their expectations are. So we are simply arranging the services around what a client expects in terms of what they want in place in order to feel fully served and be willing to pay at these levels, okay? So you need to promise and commit to never consciously lowering the standards below what we're talking about. Resist the temptation to say, I'll stop here and just charge this amount, and it's a fair price for these lower sets of services. That is one of the biggest traps that we ever come across. It's just an advisor saying, I'm not willing to work any harder than this. And usually it's frustration with the people. So you're putting together a team, and people can be frustrating. They get to a point where they, you know, you will come to a time in your business, I predict, where your team kind of digs in their heels and they try to convince you to lower your level of service and that we're doing enough for the clients. And if we stop here, we can charge a fair amount and make a nice profit and just not have to push so hard to improve the value. But that's like the devil sitting on your shoulder, whispering kind of lies in your ear. I think what you're not recognizing, if you kind of fall into this temptation, is the fact that we are facing a seismic shift in our industry that, you know, through technology and, you know, just all the technological advancements, either real or perceived in the minds of the client, we are moving quickly towards a time when clients think that you can be replaced by technology. And the technology is getting very impressive, and it's very sexy and glitzy. And as new things come out, clients more and more become thinking, you know, I can do without an advisor, or do I really need to pay that much for an advisor? And what we've put in place in this system is the only true defense to that new technology. You are becoming uncommoditized. You are irreplaceable. You are putting in place a set of services that are unavailable by technology. And if technology could ever fully protect a client and have their back and pay attention that closely to a client so that no opportunities are overlooked and no financial surprises ever occur, and that everything's well coordinated, that there's an overarching strategy, and that everybody on the team is well coordinated and well aligned with the strategy, and that everything's fully transparent. I mean, we are many, many decades away from that level of service. So we are only aligning our system with what clients want and what technology. We are putting you in alignment with the least likely thing that technology could replace, at least within our lifetime. So commit to continually increasing and improving your client value. That is how to raise your confidence. It's a culture on your team. You just get your team used to the idea that as much value as we're adding to clients, what we're really committing to internally as a team is getting that increased client value in place and then continuing to move forward. We're going to continually increase and improve our client value as time goes on. We're going to commit to being better every year. And we're going to pledge to honor this advisor pact to each ideal client, no matter what. So no matter how tempting it is to not disclose something to a client or to just, you know, look the other way or not dig deep into delivering fully on truly comprehensive financial services or not, or maybe in ignoring a certain area of a client's financial life. It's you will raise your confidence if you will pledge to honor this advisor pact that you're making to each ideal client, no matter what the case, no matter what the circumstances, and no matter what the obstacles you encounter. Just don't give up. And just overall, don't give in. You know, this idea of building a skilled team of subject matter experts, it can be frustrating. Just at the moment you get your team in place, you recognize there's one or two on your team that aren't team players, and now you got to go replace them. It's very frustrating. People can be frustrating at times. Just don't give in. This is how you raise your confidence. You just commit up front that people are going to be frustrating, and I'm just going to push ahead. I'm not going to give up. If I get a team member in place and they seem to be great, and then it kind of falls apart and they become lots of drama, or they become unresponsive, or they're just not delivering at the level that we're looking for, just resolve not to give in. Just gear up the deliverables team recruitment process, start quietly looking for replacement candidates, and keep moving down the road. This resolution, never to give in, will raise your confidence level. And then high standards, you know, just never waver on your high standards. This idea of putting your clients before everybody, putting them before your team. They're, you know, it's okay to protect your team. It's okay for you to be loyal to your team. That's important. That's actually critical to a functional team. What I'm saying is don't put your team ahead of your clients. Like, don't make excuses for your team. Always put yourself in the client's shoes and take the perspective of what's best for the client, what's more for the client, what would be better for the client, what would be easier for the client. How do we take action items off the client's list and put it on my team's list? Just never accept excuses. Help your team. Resolve that these high standards need to be embraced by your team. And so if you catch your team saying, oh, well, I would have done that, but it was Friday and I had to leave, or I just couldn't work late, or blah, blah, blah. Don't accept the excuses. Just be empathetic, accept that they're humans, but keep them focused on the high standards. Say, I understand what happened, but next time we've got to be better. I'm looking for a commitment where we get better. And these things, you know, we are always moving forward. We are marching ahead. We're not giving in on our standards. We are holding our standards to a high level. And if I ever catch our team missing the mark of the standard, I'm not reducing the standard. I'm not accepting the lower standard. I am confronting the high standard or the missing of a high standard, and I'm going to put my arm around the shoulder of my team member, and I'm just going to say, you know, I have my commitment is with you. But next time, it's got to be better. Our commitment has got to, we've got to put our clients ahead of our team. And finally, resolve that your service offering isn't available anywhere else. Just resolve that you're not going to stop until you are the monopoly that you can easily be in your community. It's just embarrassing how few advisors in our industry worldwide are willing to step up to deliver at this level when, if you put your mind to this for somewhere between half a year and 16 months, I mean, the average is getting all of this in place in less than 16 months. You know, imagine you're sitting here 16 months from now and you are untouchable. You are a monopoly that no client can find anywhere else. Well, resolve to be that. Resolve that your service offering will not be available anywhere else. And so just to sum up the five steps, you've accepted the premises. You've accepted that the more value you provide, then the higher your compensation will and can be. The clients will accept it. You have resolved to start with establishing your costs. You're going to commit to projecting what your costs are going to be and to setting your compensation substantially higher. You're making a commitment to being profitable. You're not going to undercut your compensation. You're not going to set your compensation by your perception of where you stand as far as what other advisors charge, because you're going to take a client value approach as well. You're not only going to establish what your costs are and commit to a profit above that, you're going to make the effort to sit down with your top clients and with other potential clients in your community and figure out what they're willing to pay using the formula that we gave you. And to accept that clients are actually willing to pay substantially higher compensation, but only if you commit to being radically different from other advisors than that they have become familiar with. And just once you've gotten to that level and made that commitment, you've recognized what your costs are and you know that clients are willing to pay a higher amount, just commit to being a monopoly. There's the distance between serving at the high levels that we're talking about and then serving at a little bit higher level so that you're the only game in town is not a big trip. That is, it is a short distance from serving at these levels to being the only game in town. And then once you're the monopoly, not only is your confidence there, but you can price yourself because you're a monopoly. You can price yourself accordingly. And then finally, the issue of confidence. It's the recognition that your compensation is really directly related, linked to your level of confidence. And if you lack sufficient confidence, then you need to begin by resolving to be extraordinary and go through the confidence building steps that we discussed. So those are the five steps to setting your compensation. Now, that's it for the Advisor Pack monthly session. I'm Mark Little. Until next month, we wish you all the best in implementing.